You're listening to Seattle Real Estate Podcast.
Dan, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's awesome to be back.
Yeah. The topic of today is, and I get this a lot, it's from either first-time homebuyer, typically a millennial, somewhere in that younger generation, who've been waiting, you know, they've been waiting the last few years because prices have just been screaming upwards and they feel like they can't afford. They missed out on their interest rate. They missed out on that 2.75% interest rate because they didn't have the down payment together, whatever, whatever. Yeah. Didn't have the income, the stable job. Now they do. Is 2024 going to be their year?
I mean, first off, if you can afford the payment, yes, you're probably paying a lower rent payment than your mortgage payment will be. Most cases, that's the case. If you can afford it, rates are going to go down in 2024. But what they're going to face, depending on when they buy in 2024, is chances are, because of low inventory, it's going to be multiple offers, you know, depending on the area, right? It could be 2 offers, it could be 10 offers, it could be 20 offers. And so prices are going to escalate, in my opinion. And so the sooner, if you're a millennial, the sooner you can get in, you know, like we always, you know, say, you marry the house, not the rate, you can refinance. So if you can afford the payment now, you have the down payment, whether that's 3% on a conventional loan, or if you want to put more down, then I think it's a great time to buy because you're not competing against as many offers and you can, you might save on a $800,000 home, you might be paying 10% less now.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. I mean, what do you think?
So rates are going to come down. Yeah. I think that's what everybody is agreeing on. Rates will come down in 2024. Right. Do they come down enough to justify people getting into a more and more expensive home? Because even though the last 18 months have been slow for you and I as real estate professionals, pricing has still incrementally
gone. Yeah, we haven't seen these big drops that the media says we're going to see.
No.
It's not happening in the Seattle market.
So, that's another great question that you and I have kind of talked about. Is there going to be a market crash in 2024? Because we've had all this unstable, we've had all this inflation going on.
Yeah.
Do you see that comes out as a question? Hey, I'm going to buy in this year, but is this the year it crashes?
Yeah, I don't see that all happening. Typically, even during recessions, the housing market is strong, with the exception of 2008. Throw that one out. That's a totally different market. The housing market stays strong if there's a strong job market. You know, if there's a strong job market and interest rates come down, which we're gonna see a significant drop in interest rates throughout 2024 from where they're at today, which is in the low 7% range. If we see rates go to 6% in 2024, even something with a five in front of it. It's going to be very, very competitive to get into a house in the Seattle market.
Because so many people are going to jump in.
There are thousands upon millions nationwide buyers waiting for rates to drop.
Yep.
And even investors, real estate investors, that, you know, because, you know, I look at buying rental properties once in a while. And if you're a real estate investor and you want to buy a rental property now, depending on the market, for it to cash flow, you got to have a significant down payment.
Massive
for it
down
to cash
payment.
Flow.
Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Yes, the numbers don't work. I mean, 56% down to get it to cash flow. Well, that's going to change as rates go down. You might not have to put as much down. So you're just going to see every type of buyer getting into the market, besides obviously first-time home buyers, which is the primary buyer that's going to be getting into the market. And then when you have, like, I've got a ton of clients that tell me, I just can't stomach the payment right now, even though I can get approved for it. I'm going to wait.
So they can afford it on paper. They can get the mortgage, but they don't want to pull the trigger because relative to what they missed.
They just can't stomach a $5,000 payment when they're paying $3,000 in rent.
And, you know, that is that. So we'll cover that as well. It doesn't, in some markets, it doesn't make sense to buy.
Right. Yeah, because the cost of rent is...
The cost of rent relative to interest rates at, call it, 7.25, where we sit here at the beginning of December.
But I get those clients that, like I'm doing one now, that's, you know, he's got a significant down payment, okay? But he knows that it's going to be very competitive in 2024. He wanted to buy now with a higher rate, knowing he's going to refinance. because he knows the cost of the house is going to be significantly more. And he didn't have to go up against other offers right now.
Right. So would you recommend that if you can buy, jump in now earlier than later? Because we're talking about a market ramping up probably in quarter three of 2024. We might see an interest rate cut by the Fed, the federal funds rate start to drop end of quarter one, definitely by probably quarter two.
Yes.
Some more rate drops by quarter three. But by then, the market will have priced in all of this activity. Mm-hmm. Rates will have dropped. Everybody will pile in.
Yeah.
And now you've got your millennial buyer who is, again, behind the eight ball.
Right. Yeah. Typically, once you get to, April 1st through, September, that's a very busy buying season. The weather's better. Daylight savings has happened. It's sunnier. The days are longer.
And it's a better time to go out and look at real estate.
And this time of the year, holiday season, people don't buy houses a lot. It's dark. People are busy. Things slow down. So you're going to have a lot more people, a lot more competition.
So if somebody was like, okay, rates aren't down where I want them to be quite yet, but I know they're going to be dropping. Say they want to pull the trigger on a June 1st purchase.
Okay.
What should they be doing right now to prepare for that 6 months from now?
Well, so obviously saving money if they got a savings plan for a down payment.
Figure out the down payment.
Yeah.
Yep. Figure out the down payment. Make sure you're dialed in on your credit score. Make sure you got good credit.
Okay.
A lot of millennials having a good idea what their credit score is.
What is a good credit score?
720 plus.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. If you're over 720, you're getting the goods on the rate.
Okay.
If you can get...
And that's not to say you can't buy a house with less,
right,
but that gives you the best shot at a good
rate. I did one recently with a 600 credit score, 604 or something like that. You're paying on higher interest rates.
Right. You're riskier.
Yeah, you want to have good credit, so make sure you're making those payments on time and keeping your credit card debt low.
Okay.
Save your money for a down payment. Start looking at areas that you might want to live and start thinking about what your budget is, what your price range is.
What that looks like.
Because you got to have a budget, and hey, if rates are at 7% today, and if they drop to 6, what's my budget? Because your payment's going to be less and you could buy.
It's going to drop probably $500, something like that.
That's about right.
And if you go a full 2 points, maybe a grand in payment.
Yeah. And say like a $600,000 loan.
Yeah. Big, big difference.
Yeah.
So what's your budget? And then what can you afford? What's your budget? What can you get approved for versus what's your budget? Let's say what you can get approved for, what's your budget? Because your budget may be lower than what we could approve you for.
Okay. So what do you recommend people do?
Talk to people like me. Work out a plan. Talk to somebody like me who's not just trying to sell you a mortgage, just talking about your budget and what you can afford and running numbers based on that now, today versus... Yeah. Again, might be a slightly higher price 6 months from now. I think it will be.
I think it will be too.
So you got it.
But if they can't buy right now, then it's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant. So you're going to deal with what you're going to deal with.
Yeah.
And then 6 months from now, if you talk to me, what's the best way for you to get your offer accepted?
And that's something you work on.
Yeah, we'll do a full underwrite up front, get them approved, not pre-approved, actual approved.
Work through the difference there because it's a huge difference.
Yeah, pre-approval is standard application, credit pull, income check, asset check. I'm reviewing that with my team lead, Ember, and we're saying you're good to purchase a home for $800,000 at, say, 10% down or whatever it is that they're comfortable putting down. Here's your purchase price that you can definitely
get approved
for.
They'll give you a letter.
We'll give you a letter.
So as the buyer, you can take that with your real estate broker, submit that with your offer.
Yep. That shows the seller that you're strong and you've talked to a lender and they've reviewed your income, assets, and credit. But there's still contingency of the financing contingency, right?
Yeah. Title, appraisal,
All
kinds of stuff going in there that, final review of your credit, all that kind of good stuff, right?
So if we take that and we go to an underwriter and we say, okay, the address will say TBD on it because we don't know. And the purchase price will just be what they're estimating high end is that they're going to buy. And we get it approved by an underwriter. So the underwriter actually signs off on it on their income, assets, and credit. and says, this person is approved by the underwriter to purchase a home, XYZ home or TBD home, then they can confidently waive their financing contingency and have no financing period because they've already been approved.
Work us through if you don't know, somebody doesn't know what a financing contingency is.
Typically on a real estate contract, it's usually, it can depend. 21 days is like the default, right? Where they have 21 days to get their loan approved.
And if they don't, they can still back out of the deal, get their earnest money
exactly.
back.
Exactly. You waive the finance contingency. You can't back out due to lack of financing because your loan's approved.
Right. And backing out typically requires getting a letter from the lender, a reject.
A decline letter. Yeah.
That says, nope, not for you.
Yep.
On this one.
Exactly. So that'll help you compete against stronger other offers. So you can actually win your offer and possibly win your offer at a lower price because your loans, you've removed that contingency. For the seller goes, okay, I don't have to worry about their loan getting approved because it's already approved.
Right. I don't have to worry about this buyer backing out because they might not be able to get the loan. They're already fully underwritten versus just pre-approved.
Yes. Those are the two differences. And then a third caveat, which I don't talk about this a lot, which I should talk about more, is Fairway has a backup cash offer program. If they go through these steps and they get their loan approved by an underwriter and the purchase price is less than $1 million and they get cold feet and want to back out, Fairway will buy the home. And so the seller's guaranteed that they're gonna it's gonna close.
How does that work for Fairway?
They haven't had to buy one home back yet.
Okay.
Because I was on a call the other day about it with the CEO, and we haven't had we're basically a backup cash offer, but we'll only do it if your loan's fully approved and this person doesn't lose their job or anything like that. Nothing changes in their financial.
So it's got to fit a pretty small niche.
Yeah, it just is like, oh, okay, we're going to do this because the loan's approved and the person isn't, you know, they're not planning on backing out, you know. It's usually these deals are like very quick closes too. They're like, you know, the average closing date is 15 days. People aren't changing their mind, getting cold feet. Their loan's approved. They want the house.
These are just going to happen.
But it gives the seller some peace of mind that, hey, if this deal's not falling apart.
Right. It's not going to go sideways. So they will pick you because we're talking about if interest rates drop the way that we think they will in 2024, going to be a bunch of buyers. There's not going to be much inventory. Even if you've got the pre-approval, you've got your deal fully underwritten, you're out there looking at homes, you're going to be competing with a ton of other buyers in the exact same spot that you're in. So whatever you can do ahead of time to make your offer more
attractive,
attractive to the seller, you're going to want to do that.
Yep, absolutely.
So those are some things that people can be doing without physically making offers on home. Do everything you can up until that point.
Yeah.
And then
be ready to jump on it.
And then be ready
when
to jump
get
on.
Get a house that you like.
Say interest rates, so say we're at 7.25 now, down from like 7.8, which is where we were, September, October?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now we're down at 7.25, mm-hmm. call it 7.2. Mm-hmm. That interest rate drops down to 5.5 over,
yeah.
What are the odds that thing bumps up? Like somebody who wants to get in on some kind of adjustable rate mortgage, an ARM. Should they be doing that or should they be going for fixed at 5.5%?
Oh, I would definitely go for fixed because I think the new norm for rates in the long term, when they do drop, is not going to be near as low as they were during the COVID years.
We're not going to get down to 2.75%.
No, we're never going to see that.
So everybody asks about the 3%.
Yeah, no, forget
mortgage.
About it. Forget about it. I mean, I've been
and
doing
why
this
is
for,
that,
we've know? Been in this business for over 20 years. We've never seen that.
No.
And
during a pandemic.
No, exactly. This first pandemic we've had. Prior to that, I think we saw rates in the 3.75 to 3.875 range for a real short period.
Yeah.
But that was very rare
that
itself. You know, I think the new norm for a 30-year fixed is probably going to be around that 5.5% range eventually.
So if you can get a 5% in a 5 in front of your rate,
it's really good.
Yeah, because then you can always refinance. From there, if you did have another blip down.
Which is what happened during the COVID years, right? You had a ton of people that were sitting at 4.5 to 5%, and they dropped their rate below 3.
Yep.
You know, they dropped their rate one time and then they dropped their rate again. So I did a lot of refinances twice within 2020 to 2021.
Right.
So it's not very unlikely that we're ever going to see in the next decade, let's say, below 5%. It's possible we could get down to 4.5, but we just don't know the future, right?
We have some kind of something happens and we've got some data coming in and all of a sudden the Fed's got to drop rates because they feel like, well, you know, something's going on and we need to prepare for like a pandemic.
Yeah, we just
a global pandemic.
Yeah, who would have predicted that, right?
We were battening down the hatches.
Yeah.
We were thinking, oh my gosh, this is the end.
Yeah.
This is that one run where you don't make it out at the end because you're out of business, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, we're not, in fact, our business is getting better.
It booms. I mean, how many, there's not a lot, there are some businesses that boomed during the pandemic. And one of them was lending and real estate.
And real estate.
Yeah. I got some friends that are in the logistics business, you know, of trucking and deliveries and, you know, contracting to FedEx and UPS. They made a killing, right? Because everybody's ordering online.
Right.
You know, so there's certain business. And then if you will,
it did really
and there's
well.
There's some, unfortunately, you know, if you're a you come and see a face-to-face person or restaurant, those people suffered, obviously. It was difficult.
Dan Fletch, bar.
Yeah.
Closed.
Yeah, terrible.
Just closed.
Coffee shops, retail establishments.
Just done. Yeah, anything not essential.
Yeah.
Not essential.
Yeah.
All right, so get that down payment together. Get that credit score together. Get as far in underwriting as you can and make that happen so that you're ready to go. Because what I'm saying and what you're saying essentially is it's going to be a competitive spring, summer season.
Yeah.
And we're not expecting rates to probably go that much lower moving forward. What about people wanting to refinance? When does it make sense for them to refinance? Because it kind of goes along with first-time buyers getting that really low rate. Maybe they bought in the last cycle, they're a first-time home buyer, and now they want to bring that rate down.
Yeah, I mean, if they bought and they're at 7.5%, and a lot of it depends on, you know, the overall payment drop, you know, so the loan amount. But if they're at $500,000 on their loan amount at 7.5%, rates drop to 6.5%, yeah, that's going to make sense to refinance financially.
So how much, as a loan officer, how much do you... Is it a point drop that makes sense?
I mean, it can be less than that depending on the loan amount, right? If you're at $800,000 on your loan amount and you can drop your rate, you know, 0.75 even.
Three quarters of a point.
That's going to make sense financially. If you drop it a full percent and you're at $500,000 and your payment drops $500 a month, are you good with $500 a month savings? Yeah, most people are.
Because you're like we've talked about, you're going to spend $4,000, maybe to refinance, and that gets wrapped back into the loan.
You can add that to your loan.
But you've got less cash going out each month because you've reduced that interest rate, so your payment is less.
Yeah,
and so it might only take you, say, you've got a, you know, maybe it takes you 8 months to recoup over the course of a 30-year term. That makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
But people got to kind of analyze those numbers, just like the first-time home buyer analyzing, all right, I'm going to hold off because I think the rate's going to be lower next October.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, prices go up 8%.
Yeah, that's going to be, you don't want to be in that position where you, if you can avoid it, where you're making an offer on a house and you've got to pay significantly above asking to get that house. Unless you're good with that new monthly payment and you think, hey, I'm going to be in this house long term, versus now you can get that house for less money, not pay as much and refinance a year from now.
Right.
Maybe less than a year.
Maybe less than a year.
I think a lot of people that are doing loans that did loans this year and in early 2024 through March will be refinancing by the end of 2024.
I would 100% agree with that.
I think guys like me and you will be a lot busier.
If we're still in business.
Yeah, this time next year, in 2024.
I totally agree. And I think that is where, I think the millennial, and I throw that out there because that's just the term that is used so often, but there's multiple generations in there. not just millennials, but first-time home buyers looking to get into the market. But things have just gotten so expensive on the purchase. And then with those rates, it makes it even less affordable.
Oh, yeah.
So this is probably one of those windows to try and get in and see if you can make something happen is 2024.
Yep.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't see prices dropping.
No, not in most markets.
No, because we don't have enough inventory.
Seattle market's a strong market for housing.
Yeah. Yeah. Rents. What do you see happening with rents? Because if somebody's renting now, they're gonna want to know, okay, I'm renting now, but I'm gonna buy. What does that look like? What do you think there?
Rents have finally been slowing down because they increased so quickly during COVID, right? They're finally coming back down, but there's not been a dramatic drop. I think that it's going to be a supply and demand issue, and we'll see. It'll be more expensive than it is today to rent a house, a year from now.
Yeah. So I'm not seeing those rents decline.
No, I think they'll go up.
I think they go up.
Yeah. If you're renting, you should plan on your rent going up 5% a year, or so.
Yeah.
On average.
If not.
Maybe 10. I mean, it depends on the area. I mean, and how generous your landlord is.
Right.
If your landlord's mom and dad landlord, maybe they'll be a little more generous than the
mom
corporations.
And I talk about that all the time.
Versus the corporations that own the properties.
There's a lot of corporations out there, Amazon or Jeff Bezos, whatever entity he has, where investors can get in with like $150, get a little tiny piece of a real estate pool.
Right.
You've got more and more of that going on and fewer mom and pop landlords.
For sure.
Because they're getting ratcheted down with restrictions, mm-hmm. especially in like Seattle and Tacoma that are basically, I mean, you don't want to say they are not pro-capitalism.
Yeah.
Let's go that direction.
Right, right.
And so they've really restricted what a landlord can do. And those mom and pops are selling properties.
Because they can't raise the rent.
Yeah. Or there's such restrictions on it that they can't get people out when they need to.
Oh, yeah, because you can't evict somebody.
Or during the whole COVID thing. Yeah, mom and pop landlord, we're going to have you cover all of the expenses.
The renter doesn't have to make the payment for the next 6 months if they don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to pay it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of those restrictions are just coming off now in California.
Right. And tough place to be a landlord in California.
In Seattle, you've got the cold weather months eviction moratorium. Where you can't evict somebody during
January.
Well, no, it's like 4 months.
Oh, wow. Because it's too cold. It's too cold. They can't put a jacket on.
I don't know what the reason is.
They can't put a jacket on to load the van up to go to the next property they're going to live
in. No.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane, right?
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, my point to that is all those mom and pop landlords, which is a vast majority of single family rentals, if when they sell because they're tired of dealing with all these restrictions and whatnot, you and I just talked about you're going to need a massive down payment to make that property cash flow in today's pricing.
If you're a real estate investor, large down payment compared to, say, rates drop another percent.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to put as much down.
So the vast majority of these homes being sold by mom and pop are being purchased as owner occupied because otherwise it does not make sense.
Yeah.
The numbers don't pencil on a non-owner basis.
Correct.
Your rental pool closes up further, fewer and fewer.
Fewer investment properties to choose from.
Where does that push rents?
Yeah.
Up.
Absolutely. Supply and demand.
Supply and demand. And at the same time, your pricing is going higher because you've got fewer properties on the market. You got a bunch of people because rates have dropped.
Well, and again, like you said, these investment companies that pool their money, like you could be a real estate investor, like you and I could put money in this company that's buying rental properties and we get a return monthly interest because we have invested in a rental property that 10 people have invested in or a pool of money. And there's a lot of that going on too. So,
there's just all kinds of stuff. And that makes me think that, all right, if big investors are willing to step into the US single family market, that means long term, they see this as a win.
Right.
A numbers
Blackstone, companies like that.
Yeah. These big, massive corporations.
Huge hedge fund, billions of dollars. Yeah.
And I don't see that as much here in the Seattle market because the acquisition versus what they can get for rent doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But like one of your markets, Arizona, you're seeing some of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of that because the housing prices are so much lower.
And it makes sense.
And the rents are pretty strong.
And the rents are good. So that ratio is much more conducive to doing that kind of thing. Whereas here in Seattle, Puget Sound area, we're just not seeing that as much.
Yeah, because prices are so high.
Well, I think we covered basically all the fundamentals of what people can expect kind of moving forward in 2024. Yeah. Is there anything else you would add to their to-do list of if you're looking to buy a home in 2024? We've covered the basics. What else could they be thinking of?
I mean, just about the from an investor standpoint, obviously, if it's your primary residence, you're going to live there. But you want to think about what, you know, location, right? They say in real estate, those are the three most important things, location.
Yeah.
Think about that too. You know, obviously you got your commute, so you got that to think about. But where is a good area you can buy your first home? Like, you know, I bought my first home in Kirkland. Sold it, made quite a bit of money on it when I sold it 4 years later or 5 years later. If you're going to do that and you might live in the house, you don't know how long you're going to live there, but let's say you're going to live there 5-6 years. What's going to be the most bang for your buck as far as equity appreciation? Is it Redmond, Kirkland, Bellevue versus Renton and Kent? You know, places, things to decide on. That's what I would think about.
Weigh those choices of, okay, longer commute, bigger house, nicer house, less appreciation, less commute, closer in, smaller house.
Not as nice.
Going to have to sacrifice my ego for that appreciation. Also, you don't have to drive as far to get to work.
Right. What's that? You might have an 1,800 square foot home on the east side, rather being out and having 2,600, 2,500 square feet.
Right.
That's a little nicer. It's
nicer, newer, but it's out there relatively.
Yeah, those are things to think about.
Yeah. So come up with kind of a game plan. All right. Because then you can always kind of make adjustments on the fly with your real estate broker as you go.
And the other thing is do you want to keep the house and turn it into a rental after you move out? You know, what's going to be a good rental property?
That's true. Yeah, that's another. So be thinking down the road is kind of the bottom line. Does this studio condo I'm buying make sense as a rental?
Yeah, a 600 square foot studio condo in Seattle.
Yeah, downtown. And we've just seen those be kind of the kiss of death. That market is coming back, but there's so few people that want to live in downtown because there just isn't as much.
That's
going
a whole
on.
Other podcast, right?
I've done, many on that. Yeah.
We could go on and on.
Yeah. Because the downtown cores have kind of been turned inside out. That's getting better. But like down in San Francisco, they just hit 35% vacancy rate of office space in downtown.
Commercial, yeah.
Over a third of their space. And what that means is for people living in those condos down there, all the little businesses that would normally support your dry cleaners, your shoe repair, your restaurants, those are wiped out.
Wow.
Because there's nobody there to be doing that. Dan, thanks so much for coming on and really appreciate your sage wisdom and advice.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Sean.
Yep. Happy New Year, Dan.
You too.
All right.